It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. Last week, the Wisconsin Supreme Court ruled 4-2 that Marquette University, a private Jesuit school, abridged the academic freedom of one of its professors, John McAdams, by suspending him for what Marquette says was academic misconduct. This is a case where even supporters of McAdams found his conduct problematic. He published the name and contact information, or he linked actually to the blog of a graduate student teacher for declaring her classroom a homophobic free zone. For many academics, this was a case of academic freedom, pure and simple. They may criticize each other, but they do not want their universities policing their speech. For Marquette, a private Jesuit university, it was a matter of not having the state police the values that a private school can uphold. For the business community, it was about having the authority to punish employees who don't live up to the standards set by the employer. What do you think of the McAdams case? Are you an academic who may not agree with what McAdams said or did, but feel the ripple effect of punishing him would be too much? Do you support religious schools and are afraid that the state may just have curtailed their freedom? Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email at ideas@wpr.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Sean Johnson is Wisconsin Public Radio State Capitol Bureau Chief. He is sitting right next to me. Sean, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So this case is so fascinating. There are so many facets. We could do hours and hours just on the threads that we can pull out of this case. But what did I miss anything in this backstory
here? It's a pretty good summary there. I mean, you had a graduate student instructor. So she was, as far as her students were concerned, she was their teacher.
Mm-hmm.
But she was also a graduate student, and she said in her class that there was no need to discuss gay rights because everyone agreed on that. A student who disagreed with that came to her class afterward and basically confronted her about that. She kind of went into more detail, said that he won't be making any homophobic remarks in her classroom, and if he had a problem with that, he could drop the class. He secretly recorded the conversation. He gave the audio recording to Professor McAdams, who blogged about it and promoted that blog. And in the course of doing so, she began receiving threatening emails, letters.
Did he specifically say, go threaten her?
No, he didn't. He put the blog out there. He linked to her personal blog, which had her contact information out there. And so people put that together, contacted her, and some of them were in, threatening ways.
So this was a 4-2 majority in favor of McAdams. I'm going to ask about that 4-2 in a minute, but what was the rationale behind the majority ruling?
The majority ruling went into great detail on whether or not it had a right to resolve a contract dispute here. So, I mean, the reason we're talking about it, the reason it's kind of interesting on a national level to more people is that it involves this idea of academic freedom and the ability of a professor, a tenured professor, to speak freely on campus without worrying about losing their job.
Mm-hmm.
And also, because of what Professor McAdams was talking about here and the issue at hand, gay rights. I mean, that adds an extra level of interest to this story. But what the majority opinion spent a lot of time talking about was whether or not the Supreme Court had the right to step into what Marquette said was a contract issue that it could resolve with Professor McAdams. And the court said that it could.
That it could.
Yes.
And what was
general.
The dissent? There were two dissenters.
There was the two dissenters were the two liberal justices on the court. It was written by Justice Ann Walsh Bradley. She said that in talking up the academic freedom rights of Professor McAdams and siding with him, that the majority had essentially disregarded the academic freedom and the rights of Marquette University, a private Catholic school, to run its school by its values, to require a level of professionalism of Dr. McAdams and say when he's strayed from that. And in this case, Marquette said pretty forcefully that Dr. McAdams had strayed from that, that he had, you know, in their words, painted a target on this instructor's back, and they didn't want him around anymore. Mm. The dissent said that that's Marquette's right to make that decision. But the majority, the four conservatives on the court who ruled on this case, said otherwise.
That is the part that interests me most. A lower court, though, said that McAdams this case does not come under the rubric of academic freedom, but harassment. They said Adams harassed the graduate student. So why didn't the Supreme Court buy that?
I mean, the Supreme Court's big problem, it seemed like, with the lower court was that the lower court gave great deference to Marquette and said, you know, it's really, they're kind of the experts here in what academic freedom means, in how to manage professors, and that's not the role of this court to decide. They can handle that through their own procedures. They have a faculty senate there, a faculty committee looked at this case extensively and decided unanimously to agree to suspend McAdams. There were seven of them. And so the lower court deferred to them. The Supreme Court said, we don't have to do that. And in this case, we won't. We must not.
I want to play Marquette's response.
Private institutions need to have the ability to protect and enforce their mission-critical values. As a Catholic Jesuit university, Marquette's core values do not include professors cyberbullying students. So as a private institution, it's concerning that the court has stepped in this instance and prevented those core values from being defended.
Now, the question is, for me, was he cyberbullying her or was he just linking to her blog? That's kind of a gray area, Sean.
And the dissent said that the key for, you know, Justice Samuel Spradley and Justice Shirley Abrahamson was that it wasn't just what he wrote in the blog. It's what he did afterward. And that is, he went out and did national radio TV appearances. That's kind of key and missing from the majority opinion, that it's what he did with that information to make sure everybody saw it. That is what stirred up kind of this this uproar and drew more attention to the instructor.
Interesting. We are taking calls here. Nate from Milwaukee. Nate, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you for having me. I was going to say that I think it's you can have a discussion about whether or not something should be talked about in class without mentioning the student, who was a student by name. But I was also going to add that I wonder if there was judge shopping in this case, because not only did the county judge in Milwaukee County rule against McAdams, but instead of going to an appeals court, he went directly to the state Supreme Court. So I wonder if not only would he have potentially lost in the appeals court, but his lawyer was WIL, which is a very conservative organization, and they received millions of dollars from the Bradley Foundation, which is basically a huge fundraiser for a lot of right-wing media and candidates. And I wonder if the conservatives on the state Supreme Court saw a conservative professor being supported by a very well-connected and well-funded political organization that was conservative, and they felt that not only did they have political sympathies, but it might have even been in their political leanings' best interest.
Okay, Nate, we don't have much time here, and this is a really interesting question. Sean, this disturbs me, the idea that the court might have been sort of leaning more towards the defendant because he is a conservative professor.
Well, you did have kind of conservative allies at odds on this one. You had the Milwaukee Metropolitan Association of Commerce, which typically supports Republicans, business-friendly causes, sided with Marquette in this one. And you had the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, which is, you know, kind of as described there, gets a lot of money from the Bradley Foundation and has become a bigger player in disputes like these in front of the state Supreme Court, in, you know, they're filing amicus briefs in front of the U.S. Supreme Court. And, you know, one could imagine that the conservative majority on that court is like-minded with the Institute in some cases. You know, there was a concurring opinion in this case by Rebecca Grassel Bradley, who said, I agree with the majority in full, but she wrote separately to talk about academic freedom And she did express this from the point of view of a conservative, feeling like, you know, their voices are limited on campus in no uncertain terms. Mm. So that is how she viewed it. And that is, you know, more aligned with how, you know, Will's supporters might view the case.
We have been talking about the case of John McAdams and Marquette University. Sean Johnson is Wisconsin Public Radio's State Capitol Bureau Chief, and we are continuing to talk about this. Actually, we will talk to John McAdams' attorney in a moment. Sean, thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. The case of Professor John McAdams and Marquette University brought up all sorts of competing issues. For the suspended professor, it was an abridgment of academic freedom. Other academics who strongly disagreed with what McAdams said defended his right to say it. And people who might have agreed with what he said sided with a private school's right to hold students and faculty to its own standards, an employer's right to discipline its employees. Were you surprised by the outcome of McAdams versus Marquette? If not, why not? What do you think the impact will be for universities moving forward? What do you think the impact will be on religious private schools moving forward? 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@WPR.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Rick Essenberg is the president and general counsel for the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, or WILL. He is also McAdams' attorney in McAdams versus Marquette. Welcome back to the program, Rick.
Thanks for having me on this morning.
So, obviously, you were happy with the Supreme Court ruling.
Right. We're happy for John, but I think we're also happy for universities and the whole issue of open inquiry on campus. This case was about what academic freedom means. Marquette essentially took the position that it means what we say it means after the fact. And what the court said is that, no, if you don't have to promise academic freedom. Marquette could have any set of rules that it wanted. But what it chose to do is it chose to promise academic freedom to its faculty. And having done that, the court held, it had to keep its word. And what happened here is that John McAdams wrote a civil and accurate blog post about a matter of great public interest. And if that's not protected by academic freedom, then it's hard to see what would be.
So Marquette has said that the university will comply with the decision, but it's not happy about it. They see this as a case of cyberbullying, the cyber equivalent of yelling fire in a crowded theater. Your thoughts on that?
It's ridiculous. What happened here was he criticized. Marquette put a person in a position of authority, a graduate instructor, who it decided to make the person in charge of a class. In the course of exercising her authority, she told a graduate, an undergraduate student, that his opinion would not be tolerated in her classroom, period. When that student went to the philosophy department to complain, he was told to change his attitude and that they'd be watching him. John wrote about that. He said, look, it's fine for a graduate instructor to disagree with one of her students. It's fine. In fact, she should challenge that student to support his opinions. But what's not fine is to say that certain opinions are beyond the pale, because that's not the way that a university is supposed to work. Now, I don't know how Marquette can turn that simple act of public criticism into cyberbullying. He didn't use offensive language. He didn't call her names. He didn't call on anybody to do anything to her. Marquette uses the term doxing. He didn't dox her. He identified the person he was talking about, as we normally do when we write about people.
Right.
And he linked to her blog, blog that she decided to put on the Internet. Nothing wrong with that. Quite admirable, I think, for a person in academia to do that. And she's the one who placed her public contact information on that blog. Again, nothing wrong with it, but none of that turns criticism into cyberbullying.
So one of the things that Sean Johnson just pointed out is that he did more than just write a blog. He went out and spoke about this and kind of pointed more people to her blog. And that's what Marquette said was part of the harassment.
Well, you know, certainly in the internet world today, when we write things, we often do things to draw people's attention to it. Public radio will have a link to our conversation this morning on its website. He didn't do anything unusual. He simply said, look, I've written about something that happened at Marquette University. When people asked him about it, he responded to it. But what Marquette is saying here is that somehow, because John McAdams exercised his right to engage in a public conversation and to point out something that had happened at the university, he automatically becomes responsible for whatever reaction some unknown third party has to what he wrote. He becomes responsible for anything that can happen out there at the internet. And if that's the case, if that is a limiting factor on academic freedom, or by analogy on freedom of speech, then none of us have the right to say anything and be secure that we won't be sanctioned or disciplined for it, because it's always possible, particularly in the internet age, that there's going to be some crazy out there, some person in their pajamas in their basement who's going to send nasty emails or react in an irresponsible way to what it is that we've said.
Okay, so here's my question here.
Can't possibly be a workable limit on academic freedom.
I totally see what you're saying, but here's a question here. There's a question of questioning somebody's humanity or insulting somebody's basic right to be there, to be human. So if a white supremacist were to say to a Jewish academic, Hitler was right and he should have killed all the Jews, does that professor have the right to say, you can't say that in my class, or is he abridging academic freedom?
Well, this goes to, now you've subtly shifted the issue, right? Because now you've made the issue whether or not what she said was correct. That is it true that in a Catholic university it is impermissible for a student to express opposition to same-sex marriage? Now, that would be an odd position for Marquette University to take, given the fact that it heavily advertises the fact that it's a Catholic institution.
It's a Jesuit Catholic institution.
And, of course, the Roman Catholic Church doesn't recognize same-sex marriages.
But Jesuits do. Jesuits are a different branch of the Roman Catholic Church. So it's a Jesuit Catholic institution.
But presumably, like all Catholics, adhere to the doctrine of the Church. But this is a different issue, right? Because it would be one thing to say that we could engage in a debate about whether or not this graduate instructor was right. And in fact, no one should be permitted to express opposition to same-sex marriage. That's a debate that we could have. And in fact, it presumably is a debate that we are having. But it's one thing to say that we should debate whether she was right or not, and it's another thing to say that anyone who engages in that debate, anyone who says, I don't think that's right. I think at a Catholic university or really under any context, someone can express a differing view of what the proper scope of marriage should be and that should be debated and not silenced. To say that a person who even wants to raise the question as to what the proper course of discourse should be should be disciplined, should be fired after a 40-year career, I think is quite another matter.
Okay, so I'm gonna keep pushing on this a little bit. So what if the instructor is black and there's a kid in the class who keeps wanting to use the N-word and saying that slavery should be returned? How far do we go to say, well, you have a right to question my humanity?
Well, I don't know that expressing opposition to same-sex marriage is equivalent to questioning someone's humanity. And, of course, using a slur or an epithet or, you know, something which sort of falls into the category of traditional fighting words, if we want to use First Amendment doctrine, would be another thing that altogether. But once again, the question here is not who was right, either the undergraduate student or Ms. Abadi. This isn't a case about same-sex marriage. It's a case about whether or not we ought to have open debate on college campus. And
well, open debate, though, is open debate, no matter what they say.
Is it right for a graduate instructor at a Catholic university to tell a student that he may not oppose same-sex marriage? Now, Dr. McAdams feels that, no, that that's not right, that that's an issue that should be debated and not silenced.
Is it okay for a graduate student to tell a student?
No, even if you disagree with him, even if you think that she was right and Dr. McAdams was wrong, if we have promised our faculty, as Marquette has, a right of academic freedom, it is certainly okay for Dr. McAdams to question her view as to the proper course of scope of academic discourse.
I totally get that, but is it right for her to question somebody else who is saying something different?
Absolutely, and Dr. McAdams began his blog post by saying, look, it was fine for this graduate instructor and for this student to have this exchange. It was perfectly fine for her to challenge his view and to say, look, I don't agree with you, and to challenge him to support his opinion.
Mm.
That was fine. He said that the conversation began and it began as something that should happen in academia. But he said where it went off the rails is when she told him that I'm not even going to listen to you because your opinion is offensive and homophobic. I'm not even going to allow you to express it, even if it is relevant to what we're talking about. That's where.
And my question again is, if the student is saying slave, we should reinstitute slavery because black people are beneath us, does the instructor have the ability to say, I'm not even going to listen to that because that is racist and dangerous?
Well, you know, there may well be, you know, some opinions that are not pertinent to classroom discussion or that are, you know, sort of, you know, so beyond, you know, the scope of what we can and cannot say that a graduate instructor or a professor certainly would be able to say, look, we don't think that that is that's something that that we ought to be spending class time on. But here's the thing. Marquette University never took that position. It never said that opposition to same-sex marriage is something that we won't permit at our university. In fact, the Faculty Hearing Committee explicitly said in its report that that was not the case, that opposition to same-sex marriage is not something that denies someone's humanity and is something that cannot be spoken in a Marquette University classroom. We can debate it, but we ought not to silence it. So to the extent that you're suggesting that this was a limitation on academic discourse which is accepted by Marquette University itself, the facts simply don't support that.
We are taking calls, and we've got a couple. Barry from Rice Lake, welcome to the program.
Good morning, and based kind of continued on what was said since I had called in, my frustration with the topic is I felt if you stripped everything away, all the labels and the terms and the emotions, it came down to two things: the contract of the professor, the employee contract, and the basic employee manual. I mean, it's an HR dilemma. If you put it in writing, you have to follow that, and from my understanding of the ruling, that's what came down to, the two contracts, the tenure-type contract and the other contract, which is the employee manual. And I'm assuming that this graduate professor got some sort of compensation, either in tuition reduction or something, which would make her also an employee. So right. I guess it's simpler than all the emotions and race or hatred or anything else. It's contract law.
Thank you very much, Barry. Yeah, contract law. They did put out an expectation of academic freedom. a lower court ruled that Professor McAdams harassed her, but it doesn't sound like, as you're describing it, that he harassed her. He just linked to her blog.
Right. And this was a matter of contract, and this I think raises another issue that's important. Marquette has said that, well, you know, a private employer should be able to discipline their employees for their speech, and that's absolutely right. They should be able to do it until and unless they promise that they won't. Then, like every other employer, they have to keep the promises that they make. And so Marquette could have any set of rules that it wanted. It could completely withdraw the guarantee of academic freedom. Now, that would be a mistake. Nobody would take Marquette seriously as a research university if it did that. It wouldn't be able to attract the faculty that it wants to attract if it did that, and so I suspect it won't. Universities across the country all protect academic freedom, with the exception of, you know, there are some exceptions, typically smaller religious universities. But it's free to set the rules. But having set the rules and having made a promise, a contractual promise to its employees, it had to keep it.
So I want to go with the religious universities, because this seems to cut both ways. And if I'm running a religious university, I'm now maybe a little scared, because what if one of my professors, who I have promised academic freedom to, decides that, you know, my views have evolved on reproductive rights, and I think that abortion is okay in some instances. And that person writes that on a blog and then is fired because it does not comport with the view of the religious institution. Does this ruling make it harder for the religious institution to discipline that employee?
Well, a religious institution that has promised academic freedom should not be able to discipline that employee. And in fact, that happened at Marquette University. There's a theologian who's been there for years, and his name is Dan McGuire. And just what you described happened. He came to the view that he supports a broad right to have an abortion. He came to dissent from a number of other, sort of core teachings of the Catholic Church. There were some people who thought that he ought to be fired for that because it's a Catholic university. But the thing of it is, it's a Catholic university that promised academic freedom. Mm. And so Dan McGuire was not fired and should not have been fired. And I've got to give Professor McGuire credit. When this controversy arose, he was the loudest voice at Marquette University supporting Dr. McAdams. And Dan McGuire and John McAdams don't agree about anything.
Right.
But what they do agree on is that academic freedom means something. Now, certainly a religious university could set up a set of rules in which, you know, they told their faculty members that, look, we're sponsored by a church. Our church has certain doctrines, and we expect everyone to be faithful to and abide by those doctrines and not express opposition to them. It could do that. I think that would be a mistake for a university like Marquette University, but it's certainly free to do that if it wishes to do so.
See, what this case brings up for me is what I grew up with, and what I think you grew up with, is that democracy means that I may passionately disagree with what you say, but I will defend to the death your right to say it.
Well, that's right. And the thing about, you know, academic freedom and freedom of speech, the thing about tolerance itself is, you know, sometimes we use the word tolerance and we mean that we tolerate, we're choosing to tolerate a point of view that we actually kind of like.
Rick Essenberg, President and General Counsel of the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty. Thanks for being here, Rick. Wish we could talk longer. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.